Blog Talk Radio.
Dugout right here for another one of our preseason editions of our brand new program. We brought it to you here last week. It debuted last week and did pretty well, so we thought, what the heck, we'll bring it back again this week. And so we're coming back to you again for week number two of the preseason in Major League Baseball, our all Major League Baseball program, the Fred House Sports Cleanup Hitters. Now, last week we had a chance to hear from two of our brand new co-hosts that will be working with me on this program. But there's actually three, so you're going to get a chance to hear the third one, hopefully, if we get everything worked out here shortly. Hopefully, we're going to get a chance to get all three of them in here, and you're going to get a chance to hear the third one. Last week, we were joined by Sean Hagan and Caleb Luketic, and tonight, as I pointed out momentarily here, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to get both our guys in here. Sean will be joining us again this week, and then also will be joining us as well will be Nick Mandarana. And I believe I have Nick on the air with us right now. Nick, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great. Doing great, Fred House Mike. Great to be on the air. How are you?
Real good. I have a sneaky suspicion it was a little tense there for a couple of moments. Is that right?
Yes. I'm sitting here looking for a button to connect with you, and I couldn't find it, but I finally did. I got it, and a huge just breath of relief.
Sigh of relief, yes, indeed. I have a funny feeling Sean was going through the same thing. Sean, were you going through a little bit of were you in panic mode there?
just a little bit there, Fred House Mike. I think my heart dropped a few feet down into my feet, but all good now. So I think we're gonna have a good show tonight.
Listen, if anybody should have been panicking, it would have been me. I would have been sitting here going, okay, yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about that AL Central. Geez, I don't have a clue what to say. I made the comment to somebody here this evening. We've been working with Blog Talk Radio, and with all due respect, I'm, look. We pay for the product, so I don't have any problems dissing these people and dissing this entire product. We've only been on with them for, less than 6 months. And they have changed the entire look of their studio. We're in the third different look of the studio. So it doesn't surprise me that things perhaps maybe looked a little bit different coming in as you guys did. I haven't actually seen it. I'm going to have to go take a look at it from the way you guys looked at it coming in. But I know just from where I'm sitting tonight, this is very different looking from the way it was 2 days ago. These guys, don't get me started on Blog Talk Radio, please. But anyhow, preseason baseball, it doesn't feel like it here. But it is. It's preseason, and that's why we're doing these programs. And I have said all along, we'll use last week, this week, next week, exactly the way that Major League Baseball does. Because this is a brand new product for us here at Fried House Sports. Brand new program, brand new personnel. Nick and Sean are brand new to us here at Fried House Sports, along with Caleb. So, we're getting a feel for everything. We got to get a feel for everything. And that's what we're hoping to do by bringing you these preseason programs. Trust me when I tell you that once the season gets really rolling, it's going to be a little bit different. Things are really – in fact, we've already had some conversations here, folks, about the way some of the new segments we'll be bringing, some of the bits we'll be doing each week. And it's all starting to come together. So bear with us over the course of the next couple of weeks as we just try to get comfortable with this ourselves and get a flow going to the program. If anybody out there wants to jump in with us at any point, please don't hesitate to do so. We're talking baseball. We're going to be talking specifically here in a couple of moments. Excuse me. We're going to get into a little observation of the AL Central and the NL East. And then we've got a couple other topics we'll roll around as well. But if anybody wants to, anybody out there wants to jump in on anything baseball, 347-826-9964. That's how you can get in with us. Cell phone, landline, however you want to do it, 347-826-9964. If you are listening via a computer and you are Skype capable, well, there should be a little Skype button up there. Hopefully Blog Talk Radio made sure there's a little Skype button up there. And if you hit that little button that's supposed to be there, well, it should put you through to us loud and clear, and you'll sound like you're sitting right next to us. Chat room is wide open here at Blog Talk Radio. I see that's working. And if anybody at any point wants to, excuse me, send me a tweet, you can tweet at me at Frat House Mike, at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get a hold of me. You know, I said it doesn't feel like preseason baseball here. 41 degrees was maybe the high. Maybe. We might have gotten to a high of 41 degrees here. A lot warmer than that last weekend when you were down there in Clearwater, right, Nick?
Yeah, it was mid-80s all week. So to come back here, sitting here, it was freezing in comparison. Although today where I am, it was kind of sunny, so it wasn't too bad. Not exactly baseball there, but we did have a baseball game on campus, which was nice. Season gets started, though. Season gets started regardless. I guess the major league players have earned the right to go play in the 85-degree weather and under the sun.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we have anything? I'm looking down the soundboard here. We don't have anything to throw at Nick. I was looking for something I could throw at him. You know, you're spending those 80-degree temperatures down there last week. But, I will have to make sure I put something on the soundboard here that will be appropriate when that sort of thing comes up in the future. We took a look last week. We were joking about it a little bit on the front end of the program. I don't know if you had a chance to actually go back and listen, because this is Nick's first week with us. I don't know if you actually had a chance, Nick, last week to go back and listen to the first program. But we got talking a little bit on the front end of the program about spring training, about some of the exhibition games that are going on in both the Grapefruit and the Cactus League. I made the point last week of saying, in my opinion, of all of the four major sports, exhibition baseball is without a doubt the most worthless. It means, in my opinion, absolutely nothing. But I thought we would go back real quick and just take a look at it again real quick. But one of the points I wanted to bring up about exhibition baseball and get your thoughts on it. You know, I'm looking at the records in right now as they are. You know, and I'm looking at the Dodgers have played 17 games. The Yankees have played 21 games. Toronto's played 21. You know, if you go down the list, you're probably looking at most teams averaging about 20 games. And when you consider that the season itself will actually open for real, I believe on Easter Sunday on April 5th, and then for the rest of the season, for the rest of the league, it'll be on Monday, April 6th. You figure there'll probably be another 10 games added to the preseason for most of the teams that are listed here. So if we're averaging 20, anticipate that you're going to be looking at about 30 games for most of these teams. I don't know. That strikes me as a bit excessive. Anybody else thinking anything different? I mean, do we really need 30 exhibition games? Any thoughts, gentlemen?
I don't think we do. I mean, looking down these standings right now, I mean, we talked about the Yankees last week. Like, they're not number one. They're probably not going to do so hot this year. So seeing them at the top of the Grapefruit right now, I mean, you can't really weigh in like what's going on in here. Like, I mean, I'll be talking about the NL East later on in the program, but Washington at 9-9, like down there on the list, like they're looking like a good team this year, and they look like they're going to be winning that NL East. But again, we'll be getting to that later, and they're like below the rest of the NL East team. So I really don't think you can weigh in what's going on here in the games. The amount of games is just absurd.
No, I think you guys are right in the sense that this spring training is meaningless from a team aspect. But what spring training does, though, is it allows like the younger guys to kind of break through. And if you look at the Cubs, if you look at Chris Bryant, I mean, in this spring training, he's listed, MLB has him listed as the third top prospect in the entire league. Comes through this spring training, and just in this spring training, 480 average, 552 on base percentage, and not an OPS, but slugging 1.5. So spring training is more for, I think at least, it's more for these guys trying to make a roster and to see these prospects, these breakout players. If you want to go over to the Twins and check out Byron Buxton, he's a very small sample size, but 1-for-8 this spring training. So maybe he's not ready for the majors just yet. So I look at spring training not necessarily from a team perspective. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. The standings are worthless. The standings are useless. It gives you no type of value or forecast on how a team's going to do in reality. But I think it's valuable in the sense that you can look at guys like Chris Bryant and say, you know what, Chris Bryant's not going to hit 480 and slug 1.5 throughout the course of a 162-game season. But if he's doing this now, he'll probably be fairly successful if we let him play in the majors this year. You know, he's probably ready. So I look at spring training kind of in the sense that it gives these prospects and young guys an opportunity to make a team, whereas they wouldn't have an opportunity to play with the professionals and play with the already established superstars in any other sense.
And I got you on that. And obviously a lot of teams, you know, they're going to crowd their preseason roster with AAA and AA, maybe even some single-A guys. But, Nick, in reality, it's really very, very rare. I mean, most teams, major league teams, walk into preseason on the very first day with their roster in hand. They pretty much know what their roster is going to be on starting day, on opening day. And with the exception of maybe, what would you say, 1, 2, maybe there's a team out there with 3 openings for a bench player. That's about the extent of it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would agree. I think for the most part you're correct. And this seems really, really boring to an average fan's perspective, because all people care about is really what's happening at the major league level. But let's take it even further and say a young 19, 20-year-old comes in, does really well, not necessarily major league ready yet, doesn't have a spot for him on the major league roster, but they bump him up to double-A. They say, you know, we're going to keep an eye on you. You know, you're somebody to watch. So in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't make that big of a difference. It's not like entirely necessary, and not a team's not going to look at spring training and every team come out with 3 new players that they're going to stick on the major league roster. But I think from a front office perspective, you'll see some things that you're shocked at, some guys that you're disappointed in, some young guys that you think could be good down the road, and maybe you'll find a guy like Chris Bryant that you say, we thought he was maybe 2-3 years away, but we're going to put him on the major league roster in April.
Now, Nick, you were down there for a couple of days at Clearwater, and how many, 2 days, 3 days you were down there?
I was down there 3 days, four days, 2 games.
Okay, gotcha, right. That's what I thought. It wasn't like the whole week. It was just like a shortened week. But, and I know this was your first time getting down to spring training, but tell me from your experience, from what you know about how this game operates at this time of year in both the Cactus and Grapefruit Leagues, and perhaps maybe from what you've seen, are these games being scouted by other teams?
Yes, actually. I went down with my dad and my brother, but my girlfriend's family was down there around the same time, and her brother actually walked up to ask somebody to take a picture of him, her, and their dad. And it turned out that it was a scout. So there are scouts there, definitely. But I think when you're talking about scouts at this game, a lot of these scouts are not looking at the younger guys. The team scouts are looking at their own younger guys, but you better believe that at every Phillies spring training game, there's minimum of 3 to 4 scouts there watching Cole Hamels. You know, there's a minimum of three to four scouts there watching Jonathan Papelbon. And if you go around the league, if you're looking at a Tigers game and David Price is pitching and he's got 33 starts left in Detroit,
you better believe there's scouts there watching him and, you know, reporting back. Should we go for this guy? How much is he worth? Can we trade for him at the deadline? Can we pick him up after the season's over? There's definitely, absolutely scouts at these games, but I'd have to say these scouts that are going there are more for the already established players.
Right. I was just about to say, I mean, a team like Philadelphia, where look, it's been unabashed. Nobody's hiding it. The Phils are trying to move Ryan Howard. I would think, you know, they're going to be looking, scouts are going to be there looking at Ryan Howard, seeing how he is coming out of spring training. As you say, a Cole Hamels, you know, a Papelbon, maybe even a Chase Utley, despite the fact, I think at this point right now, there are many that think that probably Chase will be the only one that probably will end up with the team throughout his entire career. I don't know if Chase is really ever going to move. But Philadelphia, I'm sure, is not the only team in a position like that. You know, I would think a team like perhaps maybe the Minnesota Twins is another one where a opposing teams would be scouting them to see what they might be willing to pick off of them, you know, as you say, going to the trade deadline later on in the season. So interesting what does happen in all of this. And while I sit here and criticize the length of a completely useless preseason, perhaps, in fact, there is really some true merit to it all, I guess, just not from a fan's standpoint. That is, unless you're lucky enough, like Nick, to actually get down there in person. Then it means something. Then it means something.
Then it's an excuse for a vacation.
Exactly. Exactly. And as you can tell, you've got one on, as you pointed out the other day on Saturday with me, you got one on the bucket list on me that I don't have. I mean, I've never been to spring training. I've been to the Hall of Fame, as we found out. Have you been to the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame?
I have been to the Hall of Fame. That's another great, another bucket list item if you haven't been.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, I got there, I guess, would have been two or three summers ago. And I was pointing out to the guys last week, I've got pictures up on my Facebook page if anybody cares to go and take a look at them. But interesting. All right, I wasn't sure whether you had gotten there or not.
Certainly on my bucket list to get up there at some point.
Well, it's on my bucket list, as I pointed out, to get to all of them. I mean, I think Canton would absolutely be probably the next one in line because of its proximity. I mean, we're only talking Ohio. You know. All right, well, let's get into it a little bit here. This is our preseason edition of Frat House Sports' Cleanup Hitters. If anybody out there wants to jump in with us, I'm being joined here tonight by Nick and by Sean. And our number to get a hold of us here, 347-826-9964. Please give us a holler. We'd love to chat with you about anything on your mind with regard to baseball, preseason baseball, or anything that might be going on in and around baseball. 347-826-9964, or you can hit us up in the chat room, or my Twitter handle is at Frat House Mike. I check that all the time. In fact, it's wide open. In fact, there's notifications over there now. I should go and check those out. But before I get to that, I figured what we do for the three preseason weeks, we would break down two different divisions each week. And this week, I figured we'd take a look at the AL Central, and I figured we'd also take a look at the NL East. Now, over in the AL Central, well, listen, out of that from last year, what did we have? We had a surprising Kansas City Royals come out of there. Both Kansas City and Detroit made it into the playoffs. I think we know what the outcome of that was. Right now, you know, I know we just got done dismissing all of the Cactus League and Grapefruit League records, but Kansas City sits atop in the American League with the best record in the American League at 13-8 right now. So I guess maybe not surprising, but let's hear from Nick. Nick, what's your thinking on it? Go around the different teams as you see fit, whatever order you want to go through them.
All right, well, we'll start with Kansas City since we're talking about them. Obviously, the reigning AL champs. It's a baseball town again, which I think is really big, very important to have that environment surrounding you. Last year, obviously, really good. They were probably the speediest team, one of the best in contact percentage, one of the best in batting average. Not so much power, but some key additions that I I really think are worth noting. Number one, Edinson Volquez. A lot of people are really, really hoping that he's kind of the guy to solidify the starting rotation. I'm not so sure. He's never hit 200 innings pitched before. He's only hit 183 times in 10 seasons. And last year was one of his better years, and it still wasn't fantastic. They also picked up Kendrys Morales, who will probably go and replace Billy Butler as their DH, injury-prone player. Again, not a great signing. Alex Rios in the outfield, they picked him up. And Chris Medlin, not sure if he'll be in the starting rotation or the bullpen, but where he will start is on the disabled list, coming back from Tommy John. So four really key additions for the Kansas City Royals. Not one of them I didn't think was really a huge step in the right direction. They lost Nori Aoki, which is really going to hurt. They obviously lost James Shields, they also lost Billy Butler. Yordano Ventura, I think, is the kind of guy that can really replace a guy like James Shields. If you remember last year, the Finnegan kid who pitched in the College World Series and the World Series in the same year, that'll be really interesting to keep an eye on him. Danny Duffy, he looks really, really good in spring training so far. I think he'll be a solid player for them. Eric Hosmer, obviously a solid player. But the thing with the Royals is this is a team that last year rode kind of a streak of moxie into the World Series. And now they're playing in a tough division where maybe the Twins are the only team that aren't competing to win this division. The Royals, very likely, they're a team that goes from a World Series contender, a World Series Game 7 contender, to one of the teams left out of the playoffs.
Interesting. Let me ask you this. Now, you're pointing out they made some additions, they had a few losses, but by and large, the complexion of this team did not change dramatically. Now, do you feel that is an indication by the management that, hey, we're good, we did better than everybody expected last year, let's go with the same basic setup, and we're going to do the same thing again?
I think that's half of it. I think half of it is, we're good, we were in the World Series, why change anything? And I think the other half of it is, why go out and splurge on big-name players? Why add anybody? Because we truly believe that, yes, while we credit our players for carrying us to the World Series, our on-field management and our coaching was a major aspect of this too. The small ball, the bunting, the stealing, the being able to score runs with lack of home runs. It kind of sets the mindset, the mentality that this coaching staff can coach anybody. They don't need a big power hitter. They don't need a stud player. They don't need an MVP candidate. They can take a group of, rather than a bunch of big stars, they can take a group of really good players and make it a great team. And I think they're sitting pretty on that, and it's going to come back to hurt them, because this is a team that last year played really well and did a really good job. Obviously, you know, taking a World Series to Game 7 against the San Francisco Giants, but this is a team that is coming off a year where they had to have a lot of things go their way to get where they did, as does any World Series contender, but they had to have a lot of things go their way. And you can't count on that happening again in a following season. I think this is a team – I truly do think this is a team – I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they'll get definitely at least 85 wins, 83 wins minimally, although I don't think they make the playoffs because they got some other really competitive teams in the division, and all of those teams got better and the Royals stayed where they were.
So basically what we're looking at is this is the Chip Kelly version of Major League Baseball. We're going to plug and play.
Yes, I accept a couple less trades and signings.
we'll save that conversation for a different program. I hear you.
But yeah, no, I think that summarizes it well. It's the we can win with anybody, and we've got a bunch of really good players, and that's all we need.
Gotcha. Interesting. All right. So where do you want to go from there?
We'll go to the Twins. Start from the bottom. I think the Twins are really the only team in the division that won't compete. Their offense was really strong last year. The pitching, awful. 29th in ERA, 29th in quality starts, 27th in WHIP, last in batting average against. And the highlight of their season, and this is how sad it was hosting Derek Jeter's final All-Star game. I mean, if the highlight of your season isn't a real game and it's for a player of another team, you're in a poor position. They didn't really lose anybody. I'd say that's good, but they didn't really have much to lose. Kendrys Morales, they did lose Kendrys Morales. I'd mentioned that he was signed by the Royals, but he only played 39 games for them last year, so it's not really like it made much of an impact. Though they did pick up Torii Hunter, he won 9 Gold Gloves in a row from 2001 to 2009. That's kind of what he's made his name on, but they're not really going to rely on him too much for defense, more so for offense. He had the lowest strikeout rate of his career last year. He batted .286 last year, and he's 39 years old. He'll probably DH. They also signed Ervin Santana, who I think is one of the most underrated pitchers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
His FIP was significantly lower than his already decent 3.95 ERA, which means that he pitched better than his numbers show, and that a lot of what happened were things he couldn't control, like defense, like balls just finding gaps. He's going to a pitcher-friendly field in Target Field. His walks are consistently going down. He could be a really strong ace. He could be backed also by Phil Hughes, who had 16 walks all of last year. So I think they did – I mentioned how awful their pitching was. I think they did make a huge step in the right direction in the signing of Ervin Santana. Keep an eye on Danny Santana, the center fielder. He'll be 24 this season. Batted .319, .353, .472 slash line. He's got speed. He stole 20 bases. He does strike out a lot. He doesn't walk a lot. But he'll be in left field. He's a great defender, great hitter when he does put the bat on the ball. Definitely an addition to a mediocre defense to try to push them up. Just some notes to watch out with the Twins. What I'm watching out for is that, like I said, the rotation, not just with Santana, but the guys they have, their FIP kind of indicates that the defense didn't help as much as they should have, and the defense needs improvement. I think they did that with I think that's going to come with Danny Santana. I also think Paul Molitor, it'll be interesting to see how he manages this team, starting at the bottom of the division.
Right.
But I think definitely the two things to watch are Paul Molitor and Ervin Santana. I think as an ace, he could make a huge, huge impact on this Twins team. Not enough to put them in the playoffs, but definitely a step in the right direction.
Is Joe Mauer going to be starting in the infield?
Joe Mauer will no catching for Joe Mauer. I'd have to imagine he does start at first base. That's what I'm seeing everywhere. That's what everybody's saying. It hasn't necessarily been formally announced, but
mm-hmm.
take Joe Mauer out of the lineup. That would hurt immensely the offense. So
I don't know though. I mean, his numbers have consistently been dropping over the past three seasons.
Yeah, but if you look at Joe Mauer though, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to pull up numbers just so I have them.
Yep, all right.
His numbers have been dropping, but you look around the rest of the team. The Brian Dozier signing was huge. That happened, I think, yesterday. Huge and pretty cheap, if I remember. It was like 4 years, $20 million, $5 million a year. Danny Santana, they could count on. Trevor Plouffe is definitely a rising stud. But I think Joe Mauer is kind of the core, not the core, the crux, I think is a better term, the crux of the lineup right now. 2-3 years from now, I think he's irrelevant. But this season, I think if you pull him from the lineup, it does more than just pull a .275 batting average and however many home runs he's going to hit. I think let me say this. I think with Danny Santana in the lineup and with Brian Dozier back and with Trevor Plouffe in the lineup, Joe Mauer will be protected well enough to still make an impact. He's not the Joe Mauer he was. He's not the MVP Joe Mauer, but I think he's got protection around him. And also, if you look at the first baseman they have as other options, it's not much. Although I do think Joe Mauer could be a guy you see traded at the deadline to a team that just needs another bat.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I'd be surprised. You have his numbers there in front of you, Joe's?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, what was his batting average last year?
Last year it was, 2014 Twins, .277. So down from his .324.
All right, it's better than I thought it was. It's better than I thought it was, though. Okay. I was going to say, I mean, you know, if you've got him hitting what? Seventh in the lineup, that might not be a bad spot for him. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, he's definitely not the .320 hitter he once was, but it's similar to the Ryan Howard situation, although not as desperate or traumatic. He's not what he once was, but what he is now is still, I think, decent enough, good enough that he's better than anybody you would put in that situation.
Gotcha.
The Twins don't really have anybody else at first base that they could rely on in the lineup, I think.
All right, so we're probably I'll get everybody's. I'll get yours and Sean's. And we did this last week. We'll go around and we'll quick get a rundown on where you think the teams will line up in the division, and we'll get everybody's prediction on that. All right, so where do we want to go? You want to go to Chicago next?
Yeah, we can go to Chicago. Looking at the White Sox, Rick Hahn was very busy, GM very busy. They lost 188 games over the last two seasons, so they had to do something. Obviously, Jose Abreu took the league by storm, winning Rookie of the Year. This is another team, the pitching was awful. They did add, though, David Robertson at the end of the bullpen. Really solid closer pickup. They added Jeff Samardzija.
Yep.
They added Adam LaRoche. They added Melky Cabrera. And they added Zach Duke. I think they had one of the most productive off seasons in the league.
Putting a great board. You there? Hello. Oh, I think we dropped. I think, Sean, are you there with me?
I'm still here with you, Brad.
Okay, I think we just lost. I think we just lost Nick.
Yeah, I think we may have lost him too.
Yeah, right there, smack in the middle of a conversation. I thought it was me. I thought I had lost my mic for a moment. Okay. All right. Well, listen, we're gonna. That was Nick was just about to make this point that. Hey, the Chicago White Sox might just have been the most productive team in the offseason. I couldn't agree with him more, I'm going to be honest with you, with the additions that he just ran down there of Samardzija and LaRoche and a couple of them there. I couldn't agree with him more. Well, I'll tell you what, since we're going to wait on, hopefully Nick's going to be able to get back in here with us. let's see, did he send me a note? I haven't heard from him yet. He may have lost his entire system. Oh, well. I'll tell you what, let's get over and, well, up, oh, hold on. We're having a little
crazy night. It's been one hell of a night with the technology here.
Yep. Ooh. Yep.
It just started talking to me. It was like Blog Talk Radio. I was like, did I lose you? It didn't even notify me. I lost connection.
Listen, you got to love these guys. I'm serious. Don't ever be worried about dissing Blog Talk Radio right on their own platform. I do it all the time. I'm seriously.
Yeah,
I don't care if they want to pull the plug on me. They went and changed the look of the whole darn site today, and I'll bet you that's what it is. But anyhow, go ahead. I'm sorry, Chuck.
Like, even with the young guys, I mean, like this technology, it's unpredictable. You never know.
Honestly. Well, we're all on guard now because it could happen to any of us at any given moment. All right? So, there you go. But anyhow, glad to have you back, Nick. I think you were just about to tell us that the Chicago White Sox have probably been one of the most productive off-season teams.
Yes. I don't know how much you heard. They signed Robertson, Samardzija, LaRoche, Cabrera, Duke.
Right.
I loved that. I was talking about how Avisail Garcia could be their X factor this year. Outfielder didn't play a whole lot last year. And I think between Jose Quintana, another young pitcher, and Jeff Samardzija, in addition to a Chris Sale, who's looking like the injury won't hold them back too much this year, they could have a really, really strong rotation, especially if that rotation is backed by Robertson at the end of the game. Jose Abreu, if he repeats the year he had last year, I think the White Sox are in really, really good shape.
Yeah, I might agree with you. You know, I guess the problem is you hedge your bet because, you know, you go out on that limb, and I've done this with other teams so many times in the past. You go out on that limb and you think, yeah, this is going to be the, and, you know, as we've pointed out before, you know, by the 4th of July, they'll be completely irrelevant. So, but we'll see. I mean, I would agree with you, though. On paper, they look strong. All right. Cleveland Indians?
Yeah, let's do that. This is a team where Michael Brantley carried the offense, led them in RBIs, batting average, which he batted .376 with runners in scoring position, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, runs, stolen bases. Corey Kluber broke out, led them on the mound, leading them in wins, strikeouts, ERA, and whip. They got some star power. They added Brandon Moss. I think that'll really strengthen the middle of a very mediocre power lineup. 76 home runs in the last 3 years in Oakland. I think that's a really good bat to add. They lost to Drubal Cabrera, but they got this Jose Ramirez kid coming through. He'll probably bat in the two hole in front of Brantley. He's speedy. He should be really good at shortstop. They also added Justin Masterson, which I think was a nice pickup. Keep an eye on Jason Kipnis. Really interesting player, Jason Kipnis. I think this should be the story of the Indian season right here. 2 years ago, batted .384 with 17 home runs and 84 RBIs. Last year, batted .240 with 6 home runs and 40 RBIs. He fell to the bottom of the lineup. The Indians need Jason Kipnis to bounce back and protect Brandon Moss if they want this offense to thrive. It's not looking pretty for him. Usually if they start hot and then go down, it's because
the league has caught on, although I'm not ruling out a 280 hitter in Jason Kipnis. Also, Corey Kluber obviously broke out, the whole Kluberization phenomenon of throwing only fastballs. He had 269 strikeouts last year. He's only 28 years old. He's right in the middle of his prime. Really, really a great unexpected breakout from Corey Kluber for the Indians. I think that's huge for them. And then also, I really like Trevor Bauer. He's another young starter on this rotation. I think he's got the potential to be really good, as well as Carlos Carrasco, if he ever fulfills his potential. The Indians, again, in a position to compete with the White Sox and the Tigers, and you can throw in the Royals. The Twins, like I said, I think are the only team in this division that can't compete. But the Indians, again, Twins are the only one that didn't get better. I truly think the Indians did get better with the addition of Moss and with the addition, or with the not addition, but the expectation of Jose Ramirez entering the lineup.
You know, I'm just looking down the roster a bit myself here, and you see some veteran presence here with Morales, Omar Infante. I would imagine these guys are going to be coming off the bench as infielders. Would that be the case there? What will be their starting infield? Do you know?
The starting infield will probably look something like, well, they'll have Yan Gomes will be the catcher. Carlos Santana will play first.
Okay.
Brandon Moss will probably platoon with him a little bit, get maybe one every fifth day.
Oh, I got the wrong roster up. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Hold on a minute. I got the wrong roster up. I was looking. Oh, we're talking about the Indians. I got too many windows open here. There was a name that was jumping off at me, though. Oh, yeah. Swisher was the name that I was looking at that I would imagine he'll be coming off the bat. I'm surprised he's still actually even playing, to be honest with you, but go ahead.
He'll probably wind up being their DH. The outfield will look Brantley, Bourne, and Moss. With the addition of Moss, they have the luxury of moving Swisher to DH, which is most likely. Again, they've got a lot of players that can play multiple positions, so the lineup will change. You'll see a bunch of different lineups from this team. But for the most part, the majority of the time, Swish will be the DH. They'll have Brantley, Bourne, and Moss in the outfield is the most likely scenario.
Gotcha. Okay. And I guess last but not least, we're going over to where? We've got to go to Detroit.
Detroit. Obviously, Cespedes, Alfredo Simon, Anthony Gose, and David Price in a full season. The questions are the injuries. They've got the injury bug. Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez, both battling a bit of an injury. Brad Ausmus headed into his second year as the manager. They lost Max Scherzer, went 39-8 with them, 492 strikeouts in just 435 innings, dominant. Justin Verlander is still signed through 2019. He'll make $28 million this year, and he led the league in earned runs last year. I've got my own theories about Justin Verlander. I think he's done, but the Tigers are praying to God that he comes back to half of what he used to be. They're also paying $30 million to Prince Fielder, who's on the Rangers. They're paying $30 million to Prince Fielder's salary. Not looking good financially, obviously. Miguel Cabrera underwent off-season surgeries. Victor Martinez is coming off a career year at age 35, which was kind of weird. But he'll be paid $14 million this year and $18 million until he's 39 years old. And, of course, after the contract, tears his meniscus during off-season workouts. He's questionable as to how he'll come back at such an elder age. Like I said, a lot of money tied up. It'll be interesting to see if they have much room to do anything midway through the season at the deadline. In addition to Cabrera and Martinez, Alex Avila has had some concussion issues. Anibal Sanchez, his arm's acting up again. Jose Iglesias has a shin issue. The Cespedes for Porcello trade, because they lost Porcello, they lost Scherzer, and they lost Torii Hunter. I think losing Scherzer and Porcello hurts, but the power you get back from Yoenis Cespedes is huge, because Miguel Cabrera, his power is decreasing. And I say that, and he hits 25 home runs and over 100 RBIs. But for Miguel Cabrera, that you can see, especially with this injury, you can see maybe he's over the hump. You have to imagine he's over the hump, and in 3 years, he'll be nothing better than a really good player. Scherzer gone, Porcello gone. Price has 1 year left. It'll be interesting to see how they handle the pitching, if they bring any young guys up to see what they have into the future. Alfredo Simon was a big pickup to help the rotation there. David Price, we'll see if he goes out and has a career year in his contract year. And, of course, the J.D. Martinez breakout season last year, it's unlikely that he has a similar season this year, or the same season this year. Similar season this year, though, another one of those prayers thrown up by Detroit. I think Detroit's got the most talent. They've got the best lineup, and they, despite losing Porcello and Scherzer, they still have a really good rotation. But they're banking on a lot going right for them this season, and they're banking on a lot of guys coming back 100% from injuries this season. So they're kind of in a very prayerful mood.
I was going to say, they might have the most talent. But from what you just described to me, it sounds like you're rolling out a MASH unit. Seriously. everybody you were mentioning of any real repute has either been dinged up or is coming back from a major injury. I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm a Detroit Tigers fan, I might be a bit nervous.
Every right to be nervous, especially with, you know, like you said, all the injuries just so happen to be their best players, and you lose your ace. I think the biggest questions for them are, is the bullpen solidified? How do the injured players come back? And do they have an ace? Obviously, Joe Nathan is the closer, really struggling of late, not worth the money they're paying him. He could be a trade candidate midway through the season, but regardless, will he be a good enough closer that you don't need a Max Scherzer anymore to take you 8-9 innings deep? But the starting rotation, I think, is also a big question in addition to the injuries, in that will Verlander bounce back? Will Alfredo Simon have the season they want him to have? Will David Price have a career year in his contract year? There's a lot of questions surrounding this Detroit team, but I think they also have the greatest potential of anybody in this division, if everything goes right.
Ah, interesting stuff. Good analysis there, Nick. Thank you. Let's run it down. Go ahead. How do you think it's all going to shake down in the end? If we were to list them 1-5, whoever wins the AL Central and then second place, third place, fourth place, and down, how would you pick it?
I like the Indians to win the division. I think the Indians really did a good job. They've got a good team coming in. I like what the White Sox have done this offseason, like I said. But I think the Tigers are a little too strong for the White Sox if their stars come back healthy. So I like the Indians, the Tigers, the White Sox, the Royals, the Twins. I know people are going to get on me about putting the Royals into fourth place, but I think they're a little too confident for what they're dealing with. I really like the Indians this year. I love Corey Kluber. And I think within those top three teams, the Indian, Tigers, White Sox, I'm very hesitant to place them anywhere, because I think this is a team that outside of the Twins in last place is really a toss-up. But if I had to go 1-5, I go Indians, Tigers, White Sox, Royals, Twins.
Yeah, you're right. I made a mistake. I failed to tell you that Kansas City is our strongest market listening to this particular program, Nick. How can our Kansas City fans get a hold of you on Twitter?
I'm at nmandarano.
There you go.
Spelled exactly how it sounds, nmandarano.
All right. All you KC fans, please. Yeah, don't be sending those to Frat House Mike. All right, not at Frat House Mike. Because in a moment, I'm gonna run it down, and I'm gonna point out to you KC fans, I've got you guys winning the division. All right, not getting in with a wild card, you're going to win the division. Go ahead, Sean. How do you see the AL Central break it down? And I don't recommend you piss off our Kansas City friends.
I don't know. I kind of like I like the way Nick was going with the division. I think the Indians have a pretty good shot of winning this year. I'll put them at number one. I think I'm gonna keep Kansas City at number two. And I think Detroit's injuries are definitely going to hurt them this year, putting them at number three, and then following by the White Sox at number four and the Twins at number five.
Wow, this is interesting because unlike last week where I think that there were maybe one or two times where things were pretty even, all three of us are completely different. KC France, as I just pointed out, I've got you winning the division, not the wild card, so you're going to win it this year. I do like what the White Sox have done. I've been impressed with what they did off season. I got them coming in at number two. I'll probably regret that. We'll be looking at this again later on in late September. I got the Tigers in third. The Indians bother me a little bit. I'll tell you what bothers me about their roster. Nick, I don't know if I brought it up before, but their age is bothering me. That's what bothers me a little bit there. And then I got the Twins coming in fifth. So there you have it. If anybody wants to jump in with us, any Kansas City fans that want to jump all over Nick, please don't hesitate to give us a call. He's taking your calls now at 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. And I would recommend you do that real quick before we jump into the NL East, because I know that all the Phillies fans are going to want to be calling Sean up here momentarily and getting all over him in a moment when he predicts that the Phillies will come in last in the NL East.
Which I most likely will be after the conversation that we're about to have.
We're breaking down a couple of divisions here. We're taking a look. We just got done taking a look at the AL Central. And, well, let's switch it over. Let's go over to the NL East. And this is a division that, well, because, look, all three of us are right here from the Philadelphia region. So we know this division pretty well. And I know all three of us are going to have some pretty strong opinions on it. Sean, break it down for us again. I'll let you go however you want to go with it, whatever team you want to start with, however you want to break it down. Where do you want to start?
All right. Well, we'll start at the bottom of the barrel, which unfortunately is going to start us with our own Philadelphia Phillies here tonight. Not a lot of changes in the offseason. Now, they always say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But here in Philadelphia, everything is broken, and they needed to fix a lot of things, which they did not do in this offseason. Losing Jimmy Rollins, one of the faces of the team, to the Dodgers, and didn't really pick anyone up to help out with their offensive situation. I mean, they've got a lot of the guys that we've seen over the past couple of years. And another issue with this Phillies team is that they're not old, but are, in fact, aging. I mean, you take a look at Chase Utley, who's 36 and has had problems with his knee. Ryan Howard, 35. Cliff Lee, 36. Jonathan Papelbon, 34. Carlos Ruiz, 36. I mean, a lot of these guys are starting to age and are already over the hump. And we're probably going to be losing a lot of these guys within the next couple of years. So they really need to start thinking about what they're going to be doing with the future of this team. And a couple of other concerns is what, in fact, is going to happen to Cole Hamels this year? Are they going to keep him on the roster, or are they going to try to get rid of him to try to get some young guys in that they could grow in their farm system to be able to build this team back up to where it was 7 years ago when they won the World Series? And another big concern with the starting pitching is the fact that Cliff Lee is out once again with forearm strains.
Yep.
Will he be back for the season? If not, I think the Phillies starting thing is definitely going to see some struggles this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, if you're a fan, this is just tough to watch. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, if you listen to Philadelphia sports radio right here, and I don't care which program, which radio station you listen to, you'll hear basically the same sentiment in both places. You know, this is a lot of their own doing. Long-term contracts, big contracts, contracts they can't move. And yet, you know, at the same time, at the time that they were signing these contracts, at the time that they were issuing these contracts to Ryan Howard, to Cliff Lee, even Jimmy Rollins at the time when we extended him, and, you know, I guess they were able to, you know, move him over to Los Angeles. But the really big contracts, nobody in Philadelphia was complaining at the time. You know, now we sit back in, you know, pardon the, you know, mixing of metaphors here, but, you know, we sit back Monday morning quarterbacking the thing, and, you know, we're critical. And, I mean, I think in some respects the fan base here in Philadelphia needs to be honest with themselves. We weren't complaining at the time. Nobody was complaining because the Phillies were winning. I mean, I will be honest, there were times that the Philadelphia Phillies signed a contract perhaps maybe for a couple more years than I would have. You know, my eyebrows were raising going, really? Do we really want to sign that long a contract with this guy? But I, you know, I am, for the most part, I think all of us have to be honest. We really were complaining.
I really think what's happening with this team is that they're living in that golden age of winning, and it's just, we're not in that golden age anymore. Like, we're over that. It's over. we need to move on from the Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley's, and Ryan Howard. So they need to get a new face for this team.
Nick, jump in with this. Is that what they need, or do we need a full-scale general manager change?
I think, and I've been saying this since for a couple of years now, I think the issue lies off the field. I think the issue, obviously, you need new players. Obviously, Ruben Amaro's job should be so hot it started a fire. You know, his seat should be so hot it's starting a fire at this point. I don't think the coaches do a great job. I think if you look at where we were in 2008, one of the big differences, Davey Lopes, we used to run well. And I'm not just talking about stolen bases. I'm talking first to third, second to home, first to home. They used to do much better on the base paths with Davey Lopes, get rid of Davey Lopes, and we see that just disappear. I think the other coaches aren't exactly fantastic. And I think the scouting department is horrific. I think and obviously Ruben Amaro is the figurehead of that, so he'll get most of the blame or the credit, but most of the time most of the blame. And people want to say, fire Amaro, fire Ruben, fire Ruben. And I'm not necessarily detracting that. I'm not saying don't fire Ruben, but I'm saying Ruben Amaro doesn't watch every player play, and he's not the only one that watches them play. There's a whole scouting department that does this. And I'm a proponent of – I like the whole sabermetric things, as long as it's restrained and taken within reason. I'm also a baseball purist, but I look at sabermetrics and I see the teams moving forward and the teams progressing are the teams that are taking this into account. There was an article released recently where they ranked the Philadelphia Phillies as the least analytic team in any of the four major sports. That's 120 teams and they're in last place. Do you have to be Billy Bean? No. You have to be the Red Sox? No. But the fact that we're not even considering it and we're still going on scouts' intuition, not just scouts' intuition, but very, very poor scouts' intuition, I mean, what do you expect? We're not going to get any great young players. We're not going to know who to trade, who to keep, who to start. The issue for me lies in a department that is not very often has light shone upon them.
And interestingly, I personally am a big, big fan of analytics. Not in all sports. I think in baseball it lends itself. I think in basketball it lends itself. I think even in football a little bit, but in football I think you can back off of it a little bit more. There, I think you've got a much greater. Let's put it this way: you got a better body of work to look at, I think, when you're talking about football. But I'm a big fan of sabermetrics and analytics. Always have been. And, you know, for people in my age group, I frequently get into a bit of a disagreement with them because, of course, as you would imagine, people in my age group have a tendency to be, as you just pointed out, Nick, a little more of a purist. And the people in my age group, you know, they don't have time for all the statistical stuff and the analytics and all that. And to me, I think it just makes sense. But, anyhow, I don't want to spend all of our time talking about the Philadelphia Phillies because we do have other teams to look at. But you can bet we're going to be talking about them. I'll tell you what. Let's hope that they have a fairly decent opening part of the season so that at least we can talk about them up until they become irrelevant at Memorial Day. Go ahead, Sean. Where else do we want to jump around?
All right, moving on up in the standings. We're going to go to the Atlanta Braves now. A lot of moves in the offseason, but not a lot going in the favor of the Braves, losing Justin Upton, Jason Hayward, and Gattis, who, I mean, Justin Upton led the team in home runs with 29, led the team in RBIs with 102. A lot of production from those three guys that I just mentioned that they're losing out of, and didn't really make up for with any of their additions to this team. They're starting pitching Julio Teheran to start in the number one slot, Alex Wood, Shelby Miller, who they picked up in the offseason, Mike Minor, and Eric Stoltz. Mike Minor also, he might start the season out on the DL with a shoulder injury. And the X factor here on this team is definitely going to be Shelby Miller in the starting pitching, because other than that, there's a lot of questions with how well the starting pitching is going to do this year. And as I said before, there's going to be a lot of struggles in the offense of this team, losing three of their biggest producers. And again, not really making up for it with any of the additions they made. The only thing looking up for them is the bullpen. They have Craig Kimbrell, probably the top closer in the league. A few veterans in there that'll probably help out. But other than that, not going to see a lot of production out of these Braves. And another team that probably isn't in contention for the top spot in this division.
Sean, this is a team that last season there were a lot of people that kind of thought, well, a lot of analysts that kind of thought, hey, Atlanta might actually be able to win this division. And there were times that they certainly did show flashes of being real contenders. This is a weird team because they went from those high hopes about a year ago to right now, all the analyses that I've read, and yours included here, is kind of referring to them as a mid-peer or a mid-pack sort of team at best. I don't get it. How do you do that? I mean, in some respects, with the Phils, what we've seen is we've seen a steady progression downward. So none of us here in this area are necessarily surprised. The Braves were a team that, by all appearances, were a team on the way up last year. Did get up last year. I mean, they ended up second place in the division. Not that that means a heck of a lot. They were 17 games out. And below 500, but they went from that kind of an expectation to this year, the expectation being, I mean, any thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly think they showed some stuff last year. I mean, like you said, though, 17 games behind the Nationals. I mean, there was really no question that the Nationals were going to win the division last year, but I mean, I'm not really sure what happened with this Atlanta Braves team. I mean, like you said, a lot of analysts were talking about the Atlanta Braves being on the up and up, and came up pretty short at the end of the season. And with that, I think they're continuing that downward slope this season. And I don't think things are going to be looking good for this Atlanta Braves team this year.
Okay, well then let me ask you this question and we'll jump right over to this team. Does that mean then perhaps maybe a team like the Mets come in and fill the void? What do you got on the Mets?
I think they certainly could fill that void. Possibly another mid-range team in this. I'm not sure if they would fall in either the number one or the number two slot. Not a lot of changes in this offseason. Couple of pickups in Michael Cuddy and John Mayberry Jr. I'll try to pull up some numbers here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions with this Mets starting pitching. I mean, Matt Harvey missed all of last year. He's their star in their rotation. Missed all of last year after getting Tommy John surgery. So the biggest question is going to be whether or not he's going to be able to come back into full form after this offseason. And also Zach Wheeler, who is supposed to be slotted as their number two pitcher, has a torn UCL and will be getting Tommy John surgery. So a lot of questions in this Mets starting pitching. Also some questions in their lineup, as David Wright has been having issues with injuries over the past couple of years. He's fighting those, not really putting up the numbers that you would expect out of a guy like David Wright. A few guys that could be out to start the season: Daniel Murphy with a pulled hamstring. Wilmer Flores is going day by day with a bruised left foot. Certainly a lot of questions with this New York Mets team. And I'm thinking if some things can go in their favor, if they can get Matt Harvey back up to full form. If they could get some production out of David Wright, even though with the injuries he's been fighting, I really think that, and also the pickup with Kudryavtsev, 36. But I think that if things go right for this Mets team, they might be able to put up a good record this season, maybe win 80 games, possibly, fall somewhere in the middle of the pack.
Okay. I was just looking up some numbers myself here real quick. Okay. All right. So let's see. Where do we need to go yet? We need to go take a look at – oh, yeah. I think we kind of alluded to it a little bit last week. I know we did. Talking about the Marlins. I've actually heard some analysts stepping up and saying, hey, listen, this Marlins team – who, as I pointed out last week, have been a team that I have absolutely ripped apart for the better part of three seasons and the ownership of this particular team, this Marlins team might actually be a really, really good team this season. Break it down for us, Sean.
And you said they very well could be a contender for this NL East, making a lot of pickups this season, making a lot of changes to their starting nine. And I think the biggest thing that the Marlins did this season was sign Giancarlo Stanton to the largest contract in sports history, a $325 million contract to hold on to him, which makes a lot of sense as he was their leader in batting average, home runs, RBIs, and OPB last season. Definitely an offensive threat for this Marlins team. Also picking up a lot of veterans in their pitching staff and also their lineup, which is definitely going to help with their offensive situation. Some of their pickups at pitching are questionable, as Dan Herron has been contemplating retirement for a while, and also their star pitcher, Jose Fernandez, will be starting the season on the disabled list due to Tommy John surgery. But, however, I think with the pickups that the Marlins have made in this offseason, a lot of veteran bats that they're bringing onto the team who are definitely going to pitch in, Stanton, again, signing him to that contract, definitely keeping that boost in their offense. Christian Yelich, who is looking to maybe break out, become a little bit of a star on this team. And if things work out for this Marlins team, if they can keep their numbers up hitting, if they can keep their pitching staff in order, then they're definitely going to be in contention for the title this season.
Mm-hmm. Let me pull Nick in here for a minute. Nick, what have you heard? I've heard. Give me your sense on this Marlins team, because, and I'm curious whether you've heard the same thing I have. That, hey, all you folks over in the NL East, wake up! This Marlins team might just make a run at it. What have you heard? What's your thinking?
I think they definitely have a chance to run at it. I think it's difficult in a division with the Nationals, but at the same time, in a division with the Mets, the Braves, and the Phillies, it's at least second place is definitely within the realm of possibility. I think Giancarlo Stanton is maybe the best hitter or offensive player in the NL. If not, he's definitely up there. Obviously, they've got guys like Marcelo Ozuna, who are decent players. Morris, who's a pretty good player. D. Gordon, who's a really good player. They picked up some offense. If Jose Fernandez is healthy, that's going to be scary. I look at this team and I say, you know what? Could they win the division? It's possible. Do I think it's likely? No, but I think second place is literally right in front of their nose if they want it. And if they want first place, it's not too far ahead. Like I said, I think it is difficult though sitting in the division with the Nationals. I think the Nationals are highly overrated in relation to their record. And I've got all sorts of theories on that, but I won't get into it. But I think if you're the Marlins, you don't worry about the rest of the NL worrying about you. You just go out and you beat them, and you worry about chasing the Nationals.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that, you know, you make a great point, too. I think what the Marlins need to do is not be scoreboard watching. Forget what the standings look like. Just go play each game at a time and beat the guy in front of you, and that's it, and leave it right there. Interesting. Second place. I don't think second place. Second place. And I agree with you, Nick. I think that the Nationals are, when you said they're overrated, I think they're overrated inside the National League. So looking at the Marlins getting a second place finish here in the NL East, I'm going to tell you right now, a second place finish is not going to get you a wild card spot, I think, in the NL East. But certainly would be an improvement dramatically for a team like the Marlins. Obviously, that's going to leave us with just the Nationals. And go ahead, Sean. Where do we? I mean, right now it sounds like they're the consensus favorite to win the NL East.
I think that's exactly what we're looking at right here. I think the Washington Nationals are definitely looking like they're going to repeat their number one slot in this NL East again. With the loss of Adam LaRoche, Nationals are losing their one of their biggest hitters. I mean, led the team with 26 home runs, 92 RBIs. And they're definitely going to need more production out of Bryce Harper and Ryan Zimmerman, who weren't really putting up numbers last year. So those guys are definitely going to have to pick it up this year. Zimmerman only having 5 home runs, Bryce Harper with 13. The two combining for about 70 RBIs. Both hit it in around 280. But you're definitely going to need a lot more production out of those guys this year with the loss of LaRoche.
Well, Jason Worth as well, I would say. They haven't gotten their money's worth for him.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of veteran guys on this team who are definitely going to have to pick their bats up this year. Jason Worth, Renard Span, Ian Desmond. I mean, those guys are veteran bats that you really need production out of. And if they can get the production out of these guys, I mean, I think there's really no question that the Nationals are going to win this division.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you bring up, that's another guy. Span and Worth, they're streaky. They're very streaky. You know, they'll get on. I saw Span have some terrific, terrific games in a row last season. And there were other times where, you could have put a scarecrow out for him, and it would have, you would have had the same difference. So,
this season, if you're not getting the production out of these guys, I mean, like you were saying, the consistency of Span. I mean, if these guys turn out to be very inconsistent this season, I mean, we might be seeing a Nationals team that is a lot different as far as production is concerned that we saw last year. And if that's the case, then we might actually see the Miami Marlins putting up a fight against this Nationals team.
Well, and you could see a team that would, in a Nationals team, you could see a Nationals team that might be looking at it and going, you know something? We're getting tired of the same old boredom around here. These players better start putting up or they're going to be out of here, in which case then they might put all their emphasis on this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. We better get it done right now.
I just want to chime in on the Nationals real quick.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Just they got good at the right time, and it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that they have room for error. They do have a lot of room for error and still be able to win this division. But that's also a curse that they have a lot of room for error because they could sit there and they could take their dandy old time and get really, really comfortable and still win the division, but be led into a false sense of security. So I think the fact that the rest of this division is no better than mediocre at best, it helps in the sense that the Nationals are almost a lock for the playoffs, but it hurts them because they probably think they're a lot better than they are, or at least a lot better off than they are.
It's the old line of being lulled into a false sense of security. Okay, Sean, run it down for us. How do you? I think I have a pretty good sense of it, but go ahead, run it down for us. 1 to 5. How does the NL East shape up?
All right. Well, from what I was saying, I think the Washington Nationals are going to take the division again this year. I think Miami is going to rise and become number two in the division. Mets, again, as I was saying, I think they're going to fall in the middle. I think they're going to come in number three. Braves dropping to number four, not looking very strong. And unfortunately, I have to say it, that I believe that the Philadelphia Phillies will be coming in last this year. Not because I want to say it, but because I think I have to, because I think that's the outcome that we are going to see this year.
Well, we got to be honest. We're going to be honest right here. That's what we're not going to. You know, I don't believe I don't hide my fandom here at Frat House Sports. Everybody knows that. I don't hide my fandom. At the same time, I don't pull any punches either. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not putting on green glasses or red glasses and drinking Kool-Aid.
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think the Phillies are going to win a division just because I'm a Philadelphia fan. There's absolutely no way that they're going to be in any sort of contention in this division.
Good. In fact, listen, trust me, because I am a Philly fan, I will always be tougher on my Philly teams than everybody else. You know, all of them, Eagles, Phillies.
And we all know that's just the way of the Philadelphia fan, is that, you know, when your team is bad, then, you know, you have everything bad to say about them. And when they're doing well, I mean, it's all cheers.
Mm-hmm. All right, Nick, run it down. NL East, where are we going?
All right, I got the Nationals winning the division. I just think they're better than everybody else, like we talked about. I also think the Nationals, once they get into the playoffs with a rotation like Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, and Jordan Zimmermann in any order, it's almost impossible to lose a series of five. They'll make a deep playoff push. I like the Marlins in second place, although I think them and the Mets will battle for second place. Not very close behind the Nationals, but I think they battle for second place. They give the Marlins second, the Mets third. I think the Braves come in fourth. And, of course, I'm going to put Philadelphia in last.
All righty, I got that. I was just writing them down. And I'm the only place I'm going to differ will be on the second and third place teams. Yeah, Nationals, and listen, let's not mistake it. I mean, Scherzer is an enormous pickup for that Nationals team, as you just pointed out, Nick. You know, that rotation might just be the strongest in the National League, really.
Yes.
So Nationals number one. I'm not ruling the Braves out. I don't know. Listen, don't get me wrong. I hate the Braves. I absolutely hate the Braves, going back to 1993 when we had to play against the stinking Braves to get to the World Series. In 1993, I hate this team. But I'm not going to rule them out. So I'm going to go Braves. You know, I'll give a little bit of an edge to the Marlins. I think they're going to improve, but I'll put them in there at third. Mets I've got at fourth, and I've got the Phils coming in at fifth place. Let's just hope, I guess, for our sake that, you know, the Phils at least make some things during the regular season a little bit interesting at different times during the season. Because God knows it's going to be a long, long summer if they don't. All right. You're listening to, folks, our brand new All-Major League Baseball program, Frat House Sports' Cleanup Hitters. I've got Nick Mandarano with me. I've got Sean Hagan with me. And we're in preseason mode. We got one more week of preseason mode, and that'll be next week. And if anybody out there wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. We'd love to hear from somebody right about now. That'd be great. Give us a call. Let us know how we're doing. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964, or jump into the chat room and leave us a comment there, or on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Excuse me. My allergies have been kicking up all week long, and it's been bad.
Happy spring.
I know, and listen, this is early, believe it or not. I got myself a good month and a half or 2 months of this stuff. I thought we'd just run around real quick and get into a couple of real quick topics, just kind of for fun. That is, if my voice will hold out here for me. I wanted to get everybody's read on, report came out yesterday in Hardball Talk. Yes, it was yesterday. A-Rod's cousin, Yuri, pled guilty in the Biogenesis case and would be spending some time in jail. As well, we know I'm trying to remember the name, Tony Bosch, the entire, I guess, Dr. Frankenstein of Biogenesis. Tony Bosch was just sentenced a couple of months ago. I forget how many years he's going to be serving in jail for his role in the Biogenesis performance enhancement scandal that took over Major League Baseball, I guess, about, two and a half seasons ago. Now we got A-Rod's cousin. Of course, Alex Rodriguez served a year suspension from Major League Baseball. But you know what kills me about this gentleman, and I got to bring it up because, well, it just infuriates me. I guess maybe from a moralistic, from a judicial point of view, from a societal point of view, you see all these people that were around A-Rod, that aided and abetted A-Rod, that were centered around A-Rod. The whole Biogenesis thing seemed to center around A-Rod. A-Rod gets suspended for a full year from Major League Baseball and gets to come back and make millions and millions of dollars this year on a team that really doesn't even want him there. And all of the players and people around him in the scandal, like Tony Bosch and his own cousin, are going to serve time for basically what A-Rod did. There's something wrong with this picture. Anybody want to sound off on it as mad and angry as I am about it?
I think it's a big name we're talking about. I think it was Alex Rodriguez that we're talking about in this situation. I mean, it's all in the name. He only got a year suspension because he's Alex Rodriguez. I mean, any other guy, if there was some no-name guy, comes into the league, gets found he's using performance-enhancing drugs or is involved in a case of performance-enhancing drugs, they'll probably do the time for it. I seriously believe that the only reason he didn't do time for this is because he is Alex Rodriguez. He's a huge name in Major League Baseball. And, you know, like, no one wanted to see a guy like this go down.
I guess the point I was going to make was, what annoys me is when you see all the figures that were around him are the ones that are going and serving time, while he gets to go on living his life. Oh, boo-hoo him. He had to serve a year's suspension last year. Isn't that such a shame? Listen, he's got his life. There are people that are around him right now that are all going to go to jail for essentially aiding and abetting him to be to set records and to fool us all, I guess. Fool us all. I don't know. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I got to be honest, I don't know too much in a legal sense about the whole situation, and maybe there is, you know, maybe the charges in which that all these people around him are going to jail for are, I'm trying to kind of formulate my thoughts here as I speak. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like I said, I don't know too much about the legal situation, so I could be way off here. This is completely hypothetical without reading too much into it. But there's a possibility that maybe taking the drug only breaks an MLB rule, but supplying the drugs and lying to federal courts and things like that actually break federal laws and federal rules.
Right.
So that could be why. I myself am one of the biggest, loudest, most outgoing proponents against PEDs. I think the issue the issue we first need to focus on is not why is A-Rod not in jail. Why is A-Rod playing baseball this year? First of all, he's 40 years old. So what? Second of all, like you said, a year off of baseball. So he's got a year to not take a toll on his body at 39 years old, a year to sit back and relax, and he's going to come back and he's going to get paid a lot of money still, and he's going to go back to a normal life, and he's still going to get to play baseball for what was one of the most drastic instances of a PED usage in the history of baseball. I think the rule right now, as it stands, is far too easy. Far too easy. I think you get one warning, and this is a baby step. I think you get one warning after the first not even a warning. After the first time you're caught, minimum 50-game suspension. Minimum. Second time, you're done. You don't get to play anymore. I think
right now it's a bigger disgrace that A-Rod's allowed to play baseball. But as a matter of him going to jail, I don't necessarily feel confident enough from a legal sense to outwardly say he belongs in jail. As a fan, I mean, it's very easy to say lock him up too. I'm not a Shred fan. I was when he was clean. I'm not now. But, you know, like I said, I don't know the laws and I don't know the rules well enough to say he does deserve to go to jail.
I got you, and I agree with you. I'm not saying that he necessarily should or shouldn't be there either. I'm not saying that. It just strikes me that when you see all these names that are surrounded around him are the guys that are going to jail, it just smacks to me of, I don't know. See, I'm going to have to reference something you guys don't know or maybe you've only learned about in history classes, but it smacks to me of going through the whole Watergate scandal way back in the early 70s where the real perpetrator of it, it never did any time at all, but all the guys that were around the situation and the scandal there in Washington ended up serving time in jail, and that's what it reminds me of. There was a lot of talk. Let me get into something else here real quick because we only got about 8 minutes left, and I like to kind of just shotgun these kinds of stories and get everybody's quick reaction on it. there was a lot of talk yesterday in a different sport, that is football, about the owners' meetings going on out in, I believe it's Arizona, about potential rules changes. And a couple of things that came up to me, I would imagine, I'm not sure, but let me ask, because I never played any organized baseball. I did not play organized baseball. I played organized ice hockey. I was an ice hockey guy. Nick, did you play organized baseball, or Sean?
Yeah, I did up in.
We actually played organized baseball together.
Yeah, oh, okay. Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that, because frame of reference on this, but I sent you guys over the link to a video that was over on Hardball Talk yesterday of Yasiel Puig in preseason, and people, you know, everybody loves to make a big deal about him flipping the bat. When you guys played organized baseball, on whatever level it was, is flipping the bat like a big deal?
It's a big.
Hello. Good.
Oh, we're all back, I think.
We're all back. Oh, we're going up and down, are we? Okay. Are we all back?
Are we good?
I think we're good. Once again.
Okay. So we must be going up and down here. I don't know. Go ahead. But anyhow, what's the deal with the flipping of the bat?
I think it's a big deal if you're 14 years old and you hit the first home run of your career to win the game. I think it's ridiculous if you flip the bat on a weak single through the right side. I think the histrionics with him are ridiculous. Fantastic player, but this is what got Bryce Harper in trouble early in his career, was blowing a kiss to the pitcher as he's rounding third in a home run. You know, it's too much for me. Does it make a difference on what kind of player he is? No, but I mean. It's something a high schooler.
What a kiss to the pitcher might be viewed as. That's unsportsmanlike.
Well, so is flipping a bat. Flipping a bat.
Okay,
is,
see, I don't know. So, I don't know. It seems to me flipping the bat would be like, to me, that's like jumping around after you scored a goal in hockey. You know, your stick goes up in the air. They gotta get me the bat.
I think that personally, flipping the bat is kind of like an in your face kind of thing.
Staring at a home run. Right. Yeah.
Like, okay. I mean, if you're celebrating a goal in a sport like hockey or soccer or whatever, like, you're not going up into the other players' faces and, like, running in. But I feel like flipping the bat is just another way of showing the pitcher, like, all right, like, you just hung that one up for me, like, so I don't even need to try, like, sort of thing. I mean, I don't know if it's a huge deal. I mean, if you make a big deal out of your bat flip, I think that's when you can start getting into issues. I mean, if you're just, like, if you're just coming off of your swing and the bat kind of like flips out of your hands, like whatever. But if you make a big deal of it, I think that can become a bit of a problem.
No, and Sean, I completely agree with what you're saying, but I think the bat flip is okay if it's worthy. But to do it every time, like a couple times a game,
yeah. I mean,
to flip a bat on a single, that's ridiculous. You hit a home run late in the game, flip the bat instead on the pitcher. I love that. That's intensity. But the way he does it, it's just too much.
No, I completely agree with you on that one.
Good job. Let's get into another potential. Again, we're going to make this one quick because we only got about 4 minutes here. But I sent this one over last week. Buster Olney, the ESPN baseball insider. Oh, isn't he something? Because he works for ESPN. Oh, aha. Buster Olney comes out with this concept that high-fiving pitchers for bad performances, well, that should be banned. If a pitcher gets lit up, we shouldn't be high-fiving him. Yeah, well, listen, why don't we go kick dirt at him, huh? Seriously? Buster Olney is an idiot. We're going to ban this. He says, this is not about pace of play rules or shattered maple bats. And okay, I'll admit it, this is really not that big of a deal. But for someone who watches thousands of games a year, this is an issue that sticks out to me like a pimple on the forehead of the game. Every time I see this happen, I feel like a neat freak staring at a crumpled napkin in the middle of the kitchen floor. An unwritten rule has apparently taken over the sanity of everyone in dugouts across America. What are they supposed to do? What are they supposed to do? Spit at them? Oh, you had a horrible game, you SOB, you.
Browse, Mike, I couldn't agree with you more.
What the world does
I couldn't agree with you more about this topic. I mean, when I played baseball, when I played any sport, I always acted as a leader on that team. And the thing is, if someone's having a down game, if someone isn't doing too well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to console them, like whether it be a high five, whether it be a pat on the back, whether it be a talk. It's like you got to go out there and you got to go out there and support your fellow players and tell them, hey, you didn't do so well, but go out there next time and get them the next time. It's like I don't understand why a simple high five or whatever like sticks out so much. It's like, oh, this unwritten rule that is like everyone notices it and like it doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, who cares? Like it's guys trying to support their fellow teammates.
Exactly.
I'll speak about not from an opinionated standpoint, but from a practical standpoint. If this rule were to be put in place, what's a bad game? A bad game is completely arbitrary. The ump's going to walk over and say, like, you high-five somebody that comes out 3 runs in 6 innings. Is that a good game or is that a bad game? You high-five the pitcher, the ump walks over, says, no, you're out of here, ejects the player. I mean, how would that even work if that were put into place?
Good point. Excellent point. Exactly. It becomes a judgment call. Too much fun. I had one other one. We'll save it for next week. Next week we will be joined here because we've just run out of time tonight. But next week, be here for our third preseason edition of the Cleanup Hitters. I'll be joined again by Nick Mandarano. And at that point then, we're going to bring Caleb Laketic back in from last week, and we're going to get Nick and Caleb together. So, Sean, you got the week off. Nice job for the past two. We appreciate it. Nick, I appreciate having you here as well tonight. Nice job tonight, guys, with the analysis that we did on both the divisions that we took a look at. Next week, we'll be looking at the AL West and the NL West. So we're going to head west, young man, and we'll get all of the scoop on everything on those teams out there in both conferences. All right. In the meantime, we will be coming back here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network on Thursday night with our flagship program. Please be here for that one. The Frat House Sports Show, the 185th version of it, 185 weeks in a row, and we'll be coming back here with you live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I appreciate everybody tuning in this evening. Thanks very much for being here with us. And again, gentlemen, great job tonight. Pat yourselves on the back. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got it. And catch us back here on Thursday evening. See you then.